Hello, welcome to episode 11, the big 1-1. I'm David Jeffrey, and with my co-host Paul Ahrens, we'll be using this podcast to explore the weird and wonderful world of Andhra, the highs, the lows, and everything in between. We'll be speaking to people from all across the country, from groups of all shapes and sizes, finding out what makes them tick, and why we put so much time and effort into entertaining the public. In this episode, we're joined by David Pollard, who is an active member in amateur drama circles across the county of Hereford. David's main focus has been on his membership of the Phoenix Theatre in Ross-on-Wye, which is coming up to its 100th anniversary. David is also involved with the Hand to Mouth Sound Theatre podcast, which brings original radio plays and stories straight to your ears. You can find out more about the podcast in the show notes. Be sure to check it out. In this episode, we talk about the difference between acting for radio and on stage, the challenges of owning your own theatre, and why radio plays really are a gateway drug. If you enjoyed the show, please do leave us a rating through your podcast app so we get recommended to other podcast listeners, and share with anyone you think might be interested. So, curtains up, and on with the show. Well, thank you for joining us, David. Can you just start by introducing yourself and your group?
Yeah. Hello, David and Paul. And I'm David Pollard, and I'm with two groups, actually. I'm with the Phoenix Theatre in Ross-on-Wye, Hereford. And also I run Hand to Mouth Sound Theatre, which is a theatre of the airwaves. I call it Andram for radio. So that's the two things I do.
Can you tell us a bit about the drama group first? How big are you? What does the group look like? And what was the last show you did?
Right. Well, we've got 100 members, but they're not all acting members. It's interesting to see why people join ostensibly a theatre group and then not really want to get up on the stage, but it's very useful because a lot of people like to run bars, greet people at doors, sell programs, be behind the set, build sets, and so on. Oh, and we've got a singers group, so that's very active, and sometimes we get singers to cross over and take part on the stage. Excuse me. You always get a frog in your throat, don't you? So that's the sort of 100 membership. We've got about 20 actors of various ages, from 80 down to about 30. It's always nice to get younger people, but younger people seem to have jobs to do. But there you go. What was I saying? Oh, yeah, we're a 64-seat theatre, and we have our own theatre. So the care and maintenance of the theatre also calls on our membership to take part. And we're lucky to have, you know, quite a nice wide range of skills, from people who are gifted carpenters to technical guys and actors.
It sounds almost too good to be true, doesn't it? A group with over 100 members, not everybody wants to act. You've got people who can sing and you have your own theatre. There's going to be a lot of jealous listeners right now. How did you end up with, were you a group first who acquired a theatre? Were you a theatre space that became a drama group as well? Or did they both emerge at the same time?
Well, the whole thing started in 1922. And started out as the Ross Opera and Amateur Dramatic Society, which was Rhodes. The original thing that they did was lots of Gilbert and Sullivan. And there was a sort of, well, it's a communal space, but a large community meeting room in the town at that time. It subsequently burnt down, but you know, 100 years. Yeah. It wasn't until I think about 2003 that the fire station in Ross came up for grabs, and the bright idea was had to buy that and turn it into a performance space, which is why we're called the Phoenix, of course. Fire engines.
Very good.
Yeah.
So the theatre's a converted fire station then?
That's right.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. I think the conversion has been so complete now that only those who knew it was a fire station would believe you.
So you don't still have the pole to make a dramatic entrance onto the stage?
No, but I have played other places that are like that. But our little theatre, we have a foyer and bar on the front. You go through into the auditorium where we put on stage plays. Our last play, you asked the question, our last play was The Lady Killers. And it's still our current play because we actually, we opened on the Saturday and we were closed on the Monday because of the COVID. But the set's still there. And everybody I ask says, oh, yes, we still remember our lines.
Believe they're lying to you. They're all lying to you.
Yeah. But the promise is we'll put The Lady Killers on again when we're allowed.
We were very close to our production going on, weren't we, David?
Oh, we were.
I think we had about 3 weeks to go, and I still had about half my lines to learn.
In many ways, though, Paul, you kept saying you wished it was pushed back a bit, and now it has been, so it's all your fault.
When David said that we were cancelling it, those lines got forgotten so quickly, you would not believe.
Yeah, well, that's me. You know, as soon as I've performed, it's gone out of my head.
Exactly, yes, I'm the same. Once those lines, once you've done your last performance, they're gone. They're filling up space. They're gone straight away.
That you'll need for the next time.
Exactly, yeah. You've got to make space for some more.
How often do you do shows then?
Okay, we do three stage shows, dramatic shows a year. We also do two singers' concerts, and we run a cinema, and that's fortnightly. All of which when we're permitted.
So illegal underground cinema.
have you been running the cinema throughout, or has it been?
No, everything is closed down.
Everything's closed.
We're, at the moment, we're only using the theatre for radio show recordings. We're currently producing Lady Windermere's Fan for radio.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, that's real fun, and it does give a lot of people pleasure to be part of a production and get into an acting space and do the thing.
Yeah, I think even if, you know, you're doing shows back to back, you forget why you do it sometimes, and when it's taken away.
For sure.
Yeah, it makes you realise. So it's a 64-seat theatre. Do you typically sell out?
It depends on the show. Recently, I mean over the last 3 years, in my experience, we've been getting up 80%, 90% houses. We perform a sort of six nights, I think. We start on the Saturday, and then the next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday are also performances. So we have a sort of little warm-up on the first night. Hopefully word of mouth takes off, and then we get bigger audiences as we go through the week.
Quite nice getting two Saturdays in there, though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. But you see, the thing is, if you've got 64 seats, you're not going to get huge amount of revenue on a three-night run.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the downside, if you like, of having your own theatre. There's a roof to maintain. There's damp to be kept out. There's painting to be refreshed. You name it.
Overheads for the overhead. So would you pitch yourself as... are you like truly amateur, semi-professional? Do you have professional people involved? Or are you open to... everyone.
Yeah, there's no professional involvement at all, which is great at the moment because we don't have you know, employees to worry about. Mm-hmm. Everything's voluntary, everything's amateurs.
That's the way we like it, eh, Paul?
Oh, definitely.
100%. So, what would you say so far your group's biggest achievement's been then?
Oof.
You've got 100 years of history to...
Yeah. Well, 100 years of history is pretty good achievement. But from a putting on shows, a performance point of view, we're members of NODA, by the way, so we usually get picked up as a nominee for a NODA award in our area. And we've been best play of the year in our area three or four times.
Oh, wow.
I was just going to ask, what are you, how far ahead do you like plan your shows? Do you have like a schedule worked out for next year yet? And I guess more the question I'm going to ask is, 1922 you started. Have you worked anything out for 2022 yet? Have you got? Well, have you started? You know, putting out irons in the fire there.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Funny enough, everybody sort of blinked at that. I suppose we've been through so many iterations anyway, having been this sort of Gilbert and Sullivan Society and then various other iterations. I don't think anybody really realises we've done 100 years or coming up for 100 years. But in answer to your broad question, we have a superb lady, Suzanne, who... she's the glue that holds it together. She's the person who puts the schedule together. And she's great because you can go to her and say, Suzanne, I fancy this. What do you think about it? We have a nice discussion about it. If she's up for it, you get put into the schedule. And she's always as good as her word. If she says November 12 month is when you can do this, November 12th month rolls around and you're on. We do have a sort of control in the sense that when we propose what we want to do, we have a group reading, usually sort of 15, 20 members turn up. The play is read and everybody sort of says, shall we do this? And 90% of the time it's, oh yes, yeah, let's do this. And the other 10%, it's tail between legs time.
I'm not really sure how we do it, Paul. It's been so long. I think basically we say we're going to try and fill our year's slots, and then no one comes forward, so we beg people. No one comes forward, so me and Paul agree to do it, and then we say never again. We'll plan better next time.
Well,
it never works out.
Well, we did have a decent schedule worked out for 2020. We had a lot of things ready to go. You know, exciting summer play, Dracula in October, Panto, Edinburgh show, and obviously everything's been...
Yeah, well, that's it. 2020 was going to be a great year.
Yeah. Oh, well. I mean, we currently have no plans for 2021, really. I think we've got tentative plans to do a Panto at Easter time, but I think we need to wait and see, because obviously we're speaking now in mid-October. I don't know when this will go out, but literally Liverpool is about to go into tier 3 lockdown as of tomorrow.
We'll still be in tier 3 lockdown.
We'll certainly still be there when this goes out. So, yeah. I mean, it's I don't know how we'll be meeting up and arranging things in the future.
Well, we're simply sort of pushing our schedule out. So, as I said, we're going to start with the play that we left off how many months ago. And then the same people who had the promise were going to be next.
Yeah.
Will pick up where they left off. I'm supposed to be doing the Cherry Orchard in November. But I think I've probably changed my mind. Yeah, we keep a bit elastic anyway.
Because is it, or will it be a challenge then in your theatre, 64 seats, to get an audience in that is socially distant.
Well, it's not going to really work, because to do it socially distanced, we wind up with 18 people in. Yeah. And also, we don't have a stage as such. We're at the front. It's a performance area, but it's not lifted. So we're right by the audience, which was a bit of a shock first time I performed there, because we got into our line to do our bow, and I had my head in someone's lap. But fortunately, she was the wife of a friend, so...
Yeah, so that's the real challenge, isn't it? Even when we can get back together to rehearse, it's what are you rehearsing for? Are you rehearsing to perform to a quarter-filled room?
Mm. And of course, you know, there's the outgoings. You know, it's £75 or whatever a pop for a license to perform one time. You're not going to get it back.
How has the group dealt with COVID then? What have you been doing in the intervening period?
Right. Well, the main thing we've been doing is radio play. I'd always had this idea that radio plays would be a good direction to go in. I think really it's a bit selfish because I write radio plays. And, well, there's only the BBC. So it would be... I thought it would be nice to have other platforms to put my radio plays out on, and other people's, of course. So the COVID thing just gave me an impetus. Mm. So I set up a podcast and called it Hand to Mouth Sound Theatre, and started producing radio plays with my pals, who were members of the Phoenix and other theatre groups that I'm associated with. And then, well, I thought we'd get a bit more formal. So I went along to the committee and said, how about it? Let's get some of our official members in and give them a chance to perform on sound. And we just did a play called Panther Town, which is a brand new piece, and that's going out on the podcast next week, and that sort of grew into Lady Windermere's Fan, which came about because we're patently not going to do our November production, which tends to be a bit of I was going to say an extravaganza. But, you know, that's the one where you do the period piece, and we've got a fabulous wardrobe run by a lady called Lynn. Lynn is brilliant at producing Edwardian costumes and making us all look wonderful. So we're not going to have the chance to look wonderful in November, but we thought we'd try and make Lady Windermere's Fan sound wonderful.
So what would you say the difference is... or the different challenges are when you're acting on radio versus on the stage? If you were giving someone advice who was doing it for the first time.
Well, I think it's, first of all, you are driven towards the text. It's beneficial, in my view, because it all is in the text. You can't cover up the text with showing people through blocking, through action on the stage or whatever. Everything has to come through your voice. So you've got to, one, be in touch with your text. Number two, you've got to be differentiating the voices. I find that when I'm listening to a radio play, you hear two people talking, you think, well, was that Ted the detective or was that Charlie the criminal? You know, you have to differentiate. And the soundscape itself needs careful design. It's not quite like when you're doing a stage play and it's a bit of a bell rings to announce someone's coming, things like that. You get a bit more intricacy in your sound requirements, which need careful design. For example, we've got Lady Windermere who sits down and writes a letter. On the stage, you can see her producing pen, paper, ink, and scratching away. You've got to be quite subtle in how you suggest to audiences that this is going on. And subtle is a watchword as well, because I always think with soundscapes, little is often best. You know, you can swamp the action with horses arriving and shingle crunching and whatever. So
less is more sometimes.
Less is more. That's what I was trying to articulate. Yeah. It's been a bit of a shock to our actors in a way, because we normally, you know, you sort of purge on for 2 or 3 months, twice a week, going over and over and over it again and blocking it. For sound, you wind up with maybe 4 rehearsals and then it's a take. And there was a couple of sort of blank looks, and you mean you want us to perform now? Yes, we do.
We're doing our first, that sort of thing for the first time coming up early November. Mm-hmm. We're doing like a Halloween night thing, four different like snippets from 4 different shows.
Mm-hmm.
But we've never done anything like this before, so it'll be quite interesting to see how that goes. I think we've got, someone's doing a scene from Dracula. So I'm directing a scene from Night of the Living Dead. Someone's doing The Witches from Macbeth, and there's another. Oh, and Sweeney Todd as well. So we've got 4 directors, and we've got we're casting them, I think, tomorrow. So that we're quite excited about that. But it's the first time we've done anything like this, like any kind of not on stage performance. We're doing it over Zoom, so it's going to be a bit more visual, I think, than just a radio production. But I think
you're going to put this out on YouTube.
Well, I don't know if we're going to. No, I don't think we're going to record it. We're just going to stream it on Zoom for members.
That's cool.
But we're not looking to make any money or anything. We're just it's just very much a membership thing, and just a couple of scenes for each, which is
it's a sort of virtual drink.
Yes,
because part of our maybe not issue, but as a group, we've spoken to so many people, actually, me and Paul, who have done loads of things during lockdown and kind of really kept the group together. And we didn't do that. We just essentially shut down. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's the way we see it, I think the way we saw it is that, you know, people are getting on with their lives during lockdown, and you don't want, you know, we've all got things on. And so Walton Drama Group was just something that you could put a pin in and, you know, come back to. But now I think we've had the tantalizing prospect of lockdown kind of being over, and then we've had it kind of crushed in Liverpool here in tier 3. So I think once we started suggesting something like that, there was actually a lot of demand from the members. And so, like Paul said, it's the first time doing it, and hopefully it'll be a bit of a reminder that we still exist to people before we then go on to cast our first proper show.
Mm.
I shouldn't say proper, actually. Our first real
life. No, I would say proper. I mean, come on. These are going to be carnage.
Yeah. But Paul's right, though, about the difference between, like, it's like a spectrum, isn't it? There's the pure radio shows, and then there's the ones where they're primarily audio, but you can still see people on Zoom. And that in itself is a form of acting that's a lot subtler. But we also saw one of our kind of close groups, Thingwall in Liverpool. We know a lot of people in that group. They did a staged radio adaptation of War of the Worlds. So it was all into microphones, like they were newsreaders at that time. But it was also, they were also in costume. They also acted it, things like that. And it was such a good blend of not quite a play, but not.
I mean, they all had their scripts, didn't they? Which kind of made it always feel like it wasn't quite a play. It always felt like it was something slightly different.
Yeah. But a sort of magic continues to happen. I think that's it. Once you drag some actors together, it's like transformative experience. you change and you start doing things that you didn't even know were in you.
Yeah.
And I think the fact I'd forgot that they had their scripts, which kind of shows that I was either not paying attention, which isn't true because I won the raffle. because it was so good. It fit, and they had sound effects or visual effects, some smoke and stuff. It's really well done. And I think, yeah, you're right. Like the with podcasts increasing in popularity massively, and audiobooks and things like that, there is definitely a growing space for audio plays that aren't just on the BBC.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Well, I'm hoping it continues after the COVID goes away, because it's another branch of things you can do. And if you don't happen to be in the production that's going on the stage in 2-3 months, you can still hang out with another group who are doing a 15-30 minute thing for radio.
Mm. Yeah. And it's also, in and of itself, it's a worthwhile thing to do. And it's also a bit of a gateway drug maybe to people who are a bit nervous about going on stage for the first time. So you get them hooked on radio, and then you push the harder stuff onto them.
Until they become full addicts like me and you, David.
Yeah, I love the similes.
So what do you think your group's biggest challenge over the next 5 years will be? And I mean, you can say COVID, but if you say COVID, I'd also want a second answer.
Yeah, I mean, that's a given. I think the challenges are the same challenges, because first of all, you need cash flow to keep the roof on. Then you're always looking for actors, because unfortunately people do pop off the perch, or even, stop being able to learn. And guess what? I'm never going to play Romeo again. You've always got to keep your body of actors enough to do performances, and you need your body of people behind the scenes, including directors, to keep things moving along. Those are major challenges. Continuity, I suppose, is the way of putting it, because at the moment we've got sort of one tech guy who knows everything that happens up in that little box above the stage. If he has an accident, God forbid, it's out with the manuals. So it's nice to try and achieve that spread of skills, and let everybody have a little bite of the cherry.
Yeah, I think that's an issue we have as well, isn't it, Paul, around tech at least, or there's some areas where we just don't have a critical mass of people who know how to say use the sound desk or whatever. And if the one person who does know isn't around for whatever reason,
or if they're on stage,
it's
often not the issue. The one person who has a sound desk is actually in the play, then it does become an issue. I think the one thing we should take away from probably speaking to other groups over the last few months, I think post COVID, we need to do a big recruitment drive for members, not just actors, all sorts of members, a big South Liverpool recruitment drive. So listen up, South Liverpool, 2021, we're coming for you.
Then what if they join Paul and then they overthrow us?
Honestly, I'd welcome it with open arms. I'm all for revolution.
Great. So in keeping your theatre going then, how many shows a year do you have to do? Is the three shows, I know you do a lot of performances, but three shows, are they enough, or is it?
It really depends on the shows and how well they go. I've got an ambition to bring back a fourth show, but a sort of Phoenix Light, I suppose you'd call it. Because one of the things that Noda always come and eulogise over is the wonders of our sets. So whatever's put on It's a beautiful set. People sitting in the audience and gasp at it. That's good, but I'd quite like to do something in a black box, which focuses on the audio, on the actors and the text. Still sell tickets, you know. But try and keep it a bit simple, bit stripped down.
I think all ours are stripped down, aren't they, David?
Set-wise.
but I think we have limitations on our stage, so I think we generally try and keep our sets as simple as possible.
Really. Yeah,
you can do a lot though with an effective black box setup. I mean, I remember I can't remember where it was. Probably shouldn't name names anyway. But I went to see a play that the set was fantastic, but they spent so long between each scene changing from one to the other that you'd rather it was much more simple and much quicker.
Yeah.
I probably just described any Pratchett play.
Did we go see that show together, David?
I think we did. I
don't know exactly who you mean. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I know. Let's not mention it.
Yeah, I'd rather have good acting in a black box than tricky scene changes. So yeah. I think that's a great idea, to be honest. So what is, say someone wants to join your group, what are the ideal member attributes that you're looking for?
I think first thing is they have to be good in the room. You can be the individual could be a wonderful actor, but if they're not someone you actually want to spend several hours locked up in a dressing room with, for whatever reason, you know, you're not going to really encourage them. So they've got to be clubbable, if you like. That's an attribute. After that, it's enthusiasm plus skills. And humility. Me, if you offer me the part of the butler, I'll grab your hand off. I mean, I'll pretty much players cast. If you're the sort of person who says, well, I'm not turning up for four lines, but you know, make me the central character. That's not quite a sort of person I'd like to be around.
Because it's not as if, like I say, it's not our job. It's amateur. It's a hobby, and there's no hobby I can think of where you want to spend time with people who, you know, who aren't nice to be around, even if they would be amazing on the stage. Well, you know, in any Amdram show, the actual performance hours are only a small percent of the full process. Why put yourself through that?
Yeah, I mean, you've hit the nail on the head.
Any thoughts about that, Paul?
I feel like anything I say might be taken down and used in evidence against me at a later time in my life. So I choose to take the fifth.
So before we get to the kind of concluding questions then, about hand to mouth, what are your views or what are your hopes for it in the future then? Are you going to keep it close to Phoenix, or are you hoping to, I don't know, work with other groups? How do you see that evolving over the future?
Well, I'd like to see it turn into as widely available and as widely used platform as possible. I mean, already we're doing plays from the States and from Australia. We've been collaborating with a podcast called Fast Fiction that works out of Brisbane.
Oh, okay.
We actually did an Australia-US-UK co-production, which is coming out on Halloween. It's sort of Tales from the Cemetery. And we had some Australian people doing one half of it, some Brits doing another half of it, and it was all written by a lady in Massachusetts. So broadly speaking, I want to keep that going as a platform, and that's it. So it's an open platform but curated. And yeah, if the Phoenix or any Hereford company want to use it, but if any UK company want to use it, as long as they've got something worth putting on, that's what I want to do.
Yeah, that Paul from Brisbane to Walton. I do think though it's such a good, I don't know, technology has come on in such a way that it's such a leveler for people who, you know, the idea that 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we'd be able to do a radio show that people across the world listen to, talking about Amdram with people who are equally as interested in such a niche subject as we are. Yeah, I think it's great that it enables all of these creative pursuits that in the past would have been completely impossible.
Yeah. And as you say, it's the best drug possible.
Definitely.
Yep. We only endorse one drug on Amateur Hour, and that is Amdram. So what tips would you give to someone who wanted to start an Amdram group?
Think many times before you do it. I've been involved in a couple of startups. First of all, you've got to find somewhere to perform. And you've got to be able to get some consistency. We tried some years ago to set up a touring company, and we could never make our plan for what we wanted to do coincide with when the hall we wanted to do it in would be available. So there was that. First of all, you've got to have that consistency. The other thing to think about is the sheer hard work in running a company that's an itinerant company. You know, even if you always perform in the XYZ town, city hall, you've got to build your set, you've got to get your set in there, you've got to build your set there, you've got to strike it, usually with someone looking at a watch saying, please get out. That takes an awful lot of effort. So you've got to think about those two things, I think.
You're not wrong, because when I went in to check our hall that we use after they put in some COVID changes a week ago or so, I was reminded that we still have set left on the stage from the pantomime back in January.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I think it's the big throne, Paul.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, a massive wooden throne. Well, I hope they do. So, yeah, there's a lot of things that... This is a bit of a bugbear of mine, of people who are happy to be in the play and are more than happy to put in, you know, work beforehand. But once the play is done, the after show party's over and you need people to turn up the day after to take things to the storage site.
Yeah.
You know, where to be seen. Well, okay. What tips would you give to someone who wanted to start their own radio kind of performance podcast or something in that area?
Oh, God. That's asking the blind to lead the blind.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing this since May. Tip one, I think, get a decent mic. Is podcast 101, get a decent mic. After that, I think you have to do a bit of rehearsal. You have to make sure that you've got enough enthusiasm on the other side of the mic. But really, I wouldn't put myself out as an expert in any way. I'm groping around in the dark.
Aren't we all?
That's my defence. Okay, so what play or musical would you love to do that you haven't yet done?
Oh, there's one that I would really love to do because I'm a great fan of E.F. Benson's Map and Lucia books. And it's a play made out of the first Map and Lucia book. And it's called Make Way for Lucia. And it's basically a satire on the middle classes in a small town. Love to do that.
Probably very close to home for many Amdram groups.
It's a new one on me, that one.
And finally... Can you sum up what Amdram means to you in three words?
It's the vital spark.
The vital spark. Excellent. Well, David, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
So, that's episode 11. Thanks again to David for joining us. You can find the link to his podcast in the show notes. Please do check it out. If you like the show, please subscribe. Share the show on your social media. I don't know why I've left that tongue twister in every single week. So please share it and leave us a review. It really will help our show reach more people. If you didn't like it, please tell us why. We're new to this and we love to learn. All comments are welcome, including constructive criticism. We're on Facebook as Amateur Hour, the Amdram Podcast. We're on Twitter as @AmdramPodcast. We have a website, waltondramagroup.co.uk/amateur hour. Or you can just email us at waltondramagroup@hotmail.co.uk. We'll put all of that in the show notes too. We'd also like to thank our group sponsor, Armadillo Storage South Liverpool, for providing us with storage free of charge. It really is a great help. They've done nothing but look after us, and they've got excellent customer service too. Please do check them out. That just leaves me to say, stay safe, and thank you for listening.